Envoyez un message avec votre nom et coordonnées à Brian par courriel à polylingual@commercialcfru.ca pour devenir bénévole dans cette nouvelle radio collective. Apportez votre voix à CFRU 93.3 FM, la radio communautaire de Guelph.
In Canada, suicide is the second leading cause of death among youth aged 15 to 24. The majority of people who attempt suicide are not sure they want to die, but an overwhelming feeling of hopelessness and lack of support contribute to suicidal behavior. Suicide is more often about wanting to escape a painful and seemingly hopeless situation than about wanting to die. 1 in 5 people in Ontario will experience a mental health issue at some point in their life. Stigma or discrimination attached to mental illnesses presents a serious barrier, not only to diagnosis and treatment, but also to acceptance in the community. If someone you know expresses thoughts of suicide, listen, let them talk, be calm, and accept their feelings. Tell someone. Tell an RA, counselor, parent, or doctor. Call the Youth Support Line at 1-888-821-3760.
Okay, listen to Back in USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. And just before the break, we heard from Lee Reed with his track, The City, off of his album, Emergency Broadcast. I actually was at a house show with him just the... last year, my, of course, Patrick, who's been holding down the fort for me when I was in China over the last year. I mean, he's, he had a whole whack of house shows at his place. They were a lot of fun. I mean, you know, like, we really had a blast every time it happened. And, like, you know, he was at a few of those house shows. Amazing guy. Like, he's a rapper out of Hamilton. And, you know, definitely he can make it happen. I got to say that. Got to give credit to that. So I think I actually want to play a few more of his tracks. Maybe later on, but getting back to the topic at hand. Now, in the second half of the show, I really want to kind of more, in the first half, I talked a lot about the background, of course, the repression of African-Americans in the United States and kind of where it started and the kind of deception that went on and the class forces at work. In the second half, I really want to, address more specifically the incident in Ferguson. Last month, you know, the killing of Michael Brown and just the context of that particular thing, incident in this in the repression of African Americans. You know, just this is kind of like the latest incident that's made national headlines. Of course, a lot of these incidents definitely do not. I mean, a lot of them are just swept under the carpet. Nobody knows about them. And the only reason that people know about this particular case is the fact that an entire community has basically risen up and fought back. And that's the reason why it's made the headlines. It's people know about it. People know what's happening. And if they hadn't done that, it wouldn't be on anybody's radar right now. You know, that, of course, should tell us something about what's going on. But, you know, before I do that, I'm going to play a few. Some analysis by Glenn Ford and Caleb Maupin, and among others, a little later on about the situation in Ferguson. But first of all, I was talking a lot about the Black Panther Party before and Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale and their program for black liberation in the United States and their resistance against the racist power structure and the capitalist system. Of course, understanding that the racist power structure in the United States is basically tied in with capitalism. It can't exist without capitalism. It exists basically to defend capitalism and the profit motive and the exploitation of working people in the United States by serving as divide and conquer mechanism. As Tim Wise talked about in the last segment. So, one of the methods, of course, that Huey P. Newton talked about in terms of fighting back against this system is the fact that they need to mobilize the communities, African American communities, to fight back against this structure. They need to stand together. They need to be disciplined. They need to be organized. They can't just, like, you know, a riot is not enough. You know, spontaneous uprisings, spontaneous rebellions are not enough. There needs to be organization. There needs to be an actual resistance movement. You know, it's organized. You know, it has leadership. It has direction. You know, it has a base in, you know, in communities and neighborhoods. That's what it needs. Yeah, and of course, you know, as a Marxist-Leninist myself, you know, as many Marxist-Leninists who will listen to this show understand that this is absolutely necessary. If you want to actually organize working people and build an effective revolutionary movement, this is what you need to do. You know, it cannot just be spontaneous. There actually needs to be a solid organization there. So this is what he says. This is a quote from his book, Revolutionary Suicide. Huey P. Newton. In the final analysis, riots caused only more repression and the loss of brave men. Blacks bled and died in the riots and went to jail on petty and false charges. If the brothers could be organized into disciplined cadres, working in broadly based community programs, then the energy expended in riots could be directed toward permanent and positive changes. See, that's what Huey P. Newton was about. He wanted permanent, positive changes. He did not want just, okay, these spontaneous, you know, uprisings, you know, to blow off steam and then just be like, you know, plowed under the dirt by continued repression by the state. He wanted actual permanent organization, permanent mobilization of communities, you know, to resist police oppression, to resist the capitalist state, to resist exploitation by business interests, you name it. You know, he needed African Americans to be mobilized, to stand up, to be, you know, to take a stand every day. You know, to have that infrastructure there to allow them to fight back. That's what he was struggling to build. And that, frankly, is what needs to be built now. So I'm going to start going forward from that. I'm going to talk about, I'm going to play an interview that African-American activist Glenn Ford gave on the Real News Network recently about Ferguson, and certainly what he has to say really kind of feeds into, really effectively builds off what Huey P. Newton was saying. So I'm going to play what he has to say. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Jessica Devereaux in Baltimore. And welcome to this edition of the Ford Report. Now joining us is Glenn Ford. He joins us from Plainfield, New Jersey. He is the co-founder and executive editor of the Black Agenda Report. And of course, he's a regular contributor to the Real News. Thanks for being with us, Glenn.
Thank you for the invitation.
So, Glenn, big news today in terms of the Ferguson story. Attorney General Eric Holder says he'll launch a broad civil rights investigation into the Ferguson Police Department. Just give our viewers sort of a reminder about where things are at in terms of the investigation that the FBI is conducting, looking specifically into the shooting of the teenager Michael Brown. And what's the significance of this new investigation that the Justice Department is putting together?
Well, I don't know if it's big news, but it's certainly big noise. As you said, this is in addition to the investigation into that individual officer's killing of Michael Brown. This new Justice Department probe will try to find out whether there's been a pattern and practice of the abuse of Black people's civil rights in Ferguson. And they should have lots of evidence to sift through. For example, there's the case of the Black man who was beaten bloody and then was charged with destruction of public property because his blood soiled policemen's uniforms. So they've got a lot of stuff to do in Ferguson. But I think we need to look at a larger picture, and I think it's relevant here to talk about what the NAACP Legal Defense Fund asked of the Justice Department in a letter to Eric Holder, the Attorney General, last week. They want a kind of automatic triggering mechanism to be put in place so that the Justice Department would launch a review every time an unarmed Black person is shot down by police. And so I asked the official of the LDF if they understood that that would trigger literally hundreds of reviews a year. And she said, yes, they realize that, but if that's what it takes, then that's what should be done. Well, what would that take? It would, if it ever happened, require the addition of literally hundreds of new lawyers to the Justice Department with more than 1,000 supporting personnel. This would cost tens of millions of dollars, and it would take the kind of commitment that no administration has shown in modern American history. But that's what the LDF proposes, and people should, of course, support that. However, what are the obstacles to successfully prosecuting a police officer for using deadly force? The New York Times has a very interesting article out this week in which it notes that the state of Florida, which is not the worst, not the best, pretty indicative of Southern justice, certainly, the state of Florida has not even charged, much less tried, a single police officer in 20 years for using deadly force against a civilian, not once in 20 years. And Florida doesn't really stand out too far from other states. The truth of the matter is that it is so difficult for a variety of political as well as legal reasons, and I think one should emphasize the politics because that's where law comes from. But for political reasons, it's so difficult to prosecute a police officer that if the Justice Department wanted to tackle a real broad spectrum of abuses of the Michael Brown variety, they would have to go up against the legal armadas and the budgets of literally every state, county, and city government in the country, all of which would be standing behind their police forces. And I don't see any U.S. Justice Department taking on the various strata of government all around the country. I was just talking to a friend who happens to be a human rights activist, and she just came back from Geneva, Switzerland, where she and her colleagues have been pressing a committee of the United Nations to declare that the United States systematically abuses the civil rights of its black citizens. And they've been making lots of progress in embarrassing, at least, the United States before the international community. And one of the members of the UN committee asked the question, whatever happened to that guy who killed Trayvon Martin? And when he asked that, a hush fell over the room. It was such a simple and straightforward question. And the answer, of course, was nothing happened to George Zimmerman. In the beginning, you said this was big news, and I said it was a big noise. Let's see who's right.
Okay. And Glenn, sort of let's turn the corner a little bit and discuss how the mainstream press is covering this. So some people are arguing that this is a step in the right direction because now, you know, you can tackle what they're calling a broken system. What's your take on all of that?
Yeah, I call this the MSNBC political conversation, but it applies basically to all the media and to the general discussion of criminal justice as it transpires in the United States. There is the school of thought that says that the criminal justice system is flawed, but it can be fixed. Those are the folks who are asking for more Justice Department probes, whether triggered by some kind of automatic mechanism or just ad hoc, as we see the situation so far. Another school of thought says that the criminal justice system is broken and needs a major overhaul. And that's usually considered to be a radical position. But my position is that the system works just fine. It does exactly what it was designed to do. It acts with uniformity all across the United States and delivers, like clockwork, millions of black bodies to be incarcerated in the biggest gulag in the world. It does it quite efficiently. It costs a lot of money, but the money that's spent is made by somebody. And it's the uniformity, again, of the system that shows that it is a well-oiled machine that has been working at the highest possible speed for the last 45 years. That's not a broken system. If we look at it as a broken system, we're just going to tinker with it. If we understand that it is a system that is accomplishing the mission of criminalizing a whole race of people, Black folks, then we have to look in a much more systemic, societal-wide way at what we do about a criminal justice system that is itself a criminal enterprise.
But Glenn, what do you do then? Can we speak to specifics in terms of how do you fight this well-oiled machine, as you call it?
The people who are the target of that well-oiled machine have to mobilize. That's where the resistance comes from. And since they have declared and treat Black people as if we are all criminals, then it is incumbent upon all Black folks to resist that system. And that's what scares them. Ferguson stands out. Ferguson is thought to be possibly a kind of benchmark. Not because of what happened to Michael Brown, because that happens every damn day of the year. Ferguson is significant because Black people stood up and refused to stand down. They had curfews whipped on them and they did not respect them. They were intimidated by a militarized force that acted like it was Israeli in Gaza, and they did not back down. And so we saw that there is the potential, finally, after all these decades, for there to be a mass kind of upswelling of resistance among the targets of this criminal injustice system, which is Black people as a whole. Now is the stage in which we do discuss what do those now energized masses of folks do about it on a tactical and strategic basis. We can't do that today on the show.
All right, Glenn. Well, we'll do that the next time you're on. Hopefully we'll get into some more specifics. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And thank you for joining us on the Real News Network.
Got a brand new funk, kick down, body for your rap. Let's get it on, like we said before. See the brothers for the trouble, hit the busted bubble, cause we rumble from our lower level. To condition your condition, we're gonna do a song that you never heard before. Make it all jump along to the education. Brothers gotta work it out and stop chasing. In the street all willing to work it out. Come on, y'all, let's go to work. So many of us in limbo, how to get it on? It's quite simple, three stones from the sun. We need a piece of this rock. Indestructible soul. Answers to this question to the brothers in the street. School and the prisons. History shouldn't be a mystery. Our story's real history, not
history.
Work it out one day till we all
get paid
the right way in full. No bull talking, no walking, driving, arriving, and styling. Tell them soon you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
One day the brothers gonna work it out.
Let's go. your fist to the music. United we stand, yes, divided we fall together. We can stand tall. Brothers that try to work it out, they get mad. We vote, revise, realize they're super bad. Small tent and smart brothers gonna be a victim of his own circumstance. Sabotage, shell shock, rock, and boom. Day in the life of a fool, like I said before, to live it low. Life, take your time, time, yo, go slow. Look ahead, not a thing to fear. Brother to brother, not another as sincere. Teach a man how to be a father, to never tell a woman he can't bother. You can't say you don't know what I'm talking about. But one day,
all the strength, all the
brothers gonna whip it out.
Listen to Back in USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and that, of course, was Public Enemy with Brothers Gonna Work It Out. And, of course, we heard from, just before that, we heard Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report talking on the Real News Network about Ferguson and the situation there. And really the fact that, just like Huey P. Newton said in that quote which I read before, what really needs to be done is mobilization. You know, in these communities, in these African-American communities, like across the United States, you know, they really need to come together. They need to organize. They need to form organizations that are like well-coordinated, like disciplined, focused, you know, have the kind of infrastructure that they need, you know, and the roots that they need and the ability that they have, you know, and the abilities that they need in order to fight back. You know, and this is the only way that they're actually going to get, you know, any victories in the context of American society today. Like I said before, people have to fight back. You know, they had to defend themselves against the capitalist state, against imperialism. They can't just turn the other cheek. It's the same thing with African Americans in the United States as it is in Palestine, with Palestinians resisting Israeli imperialism, Israeli apartheid. You know, and there is a very, very strong culture of resistance among African Americans. There continues to be, you know, in fact, both Public Enemy and group, and, you know, frankly, rap groups, political rap groups like them, very much a part of that. They very much are a part of that, you know, that kind of expression. You know, and Ferguson, of course, reveals, you know, how these communities, even just in a spontaneous way, can rise up and fight back. You know, imagine if they were organized in the manner of the Black Panther Party. How much more they could do, how much more they could achieve. You know, think about that. That's something that we really need to think about. Now, of course, if there's one man who I can point to as a, you know, a communist who went to Ferguson. You know, he was a journalist. You know, he covered the Ferguson protests as a journalist and learned a lot from the experience, and was radicalized still further by the experience, was, of course, Caleb Maupin of Workers' World Party. I have great respect for that organization in the United States. They've really played a solid role you know, in the organizing working people to fight back against capitalism in the United States, especially in the wake of the 2008 crisis, which is still with us, of course. You know, they played an excellent role in that. They played an excellent role in Detroit, where, of course, the as you may know, the local government was effectively cutting off the water to large numbers of poor working class, mostly black, mostly African American inhabitants of Detroit. And Workers' World Party was very much integral to the organization, which led to the defeat of those measures, you know, those water shutoffs, you know, forcing the city to back down. They were a part of that. So, I mean, they're out there doing real work. They're not all talk. They're actually making things happen. They're organizing people, they're mobilizing, and they're making stuff happen. They're building a base in working class communities. That's what they're doing. And they're doing a very good job. So, Caleb Maupin of Workers' World Party, this is what he had to say about his experience in Ferguson. And I think it's actually, you know, it's something that I think we all need to learn from, keep in mind, as we go forward, you know, trying to build socialism in our respective countries. So, please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Activist. I've carried many signs, shouted into many bullhorns, but I didn't go to Ferguson in that capacity. I instead went to Ferguson as under the capacity of my profession. I'm a journalist, and I went there and I talked to people. One of the most interesting places to be was in Canfield, which was the neighborhood where Mike Brown was killed. Part of my work out there, I went and I tried to get a real feel of the neighborhood and what it was like. And it's one thing that, you know, working class people, we're taught not to talk about our own economic situation. We're generally taught, you know, that it's not something you share. People were not totally, you know, willing to come forward with that because we as the working class, we've been taught that's your personal business. You don't go there. But in Canfield, one of the primary jobs is home health care workers, people who work as home health care workers. That was one of the main jobs in the neighborhood. And that's about $10 or $11 an hour usually is what people make doing that job. And that's considered to be one of the best jobs that are there. There's a lot of unemployment, especially among the youth. And the big thing that people were pointing out constantly was, and it's been alluded to by the other people who spoke here tonight, was just how the police are just constantly breathing down on them. They said, you know, if there's a group of young men, young African-American men, one or two or more, and they walk out at night, the police are going to search them. They're going to pat them down, and they might choke them or punch them in the face just for the fun of it while they're there, while they're doing it. You know, we were in the neighborhood. We saw the vigil that was set up, the site with the flowers, and you know, one thing that really stands out in my mind. You know, there was a group of young kids from the neighborhood who were just kind of playing in the area, you know, running around as people were standing around there. And I know somebody from the Oprah Network was there speaking that day, and so there was kind of a crowd. And this 4-year-old girl came up to me, and she said to me, you know, I was there with my camera crew and all that, and she said kind of tauntingly, I know why you're here. And you're here because of that guy who I saw covered up on the sidewalk, you know. And that really stuck with me, to just hear that. But the thing that I kept hearing from people that I spoke to in the neighborhood that day that I was out in the neighborhood in Canfield where Mike Brown was ruthlessly murdered was people kept saying that things here are getting worse. The economy is getting worse. It's harder to get a job. It's harder, and the police are getting worse. The police presence is escalating, and they kept saying it just keeps getting worse, and no one cares. That's what we kept hearing. Now, I got to talk about the first night that I got in Ferguson. I was in Ferguson. We flew into St. Louis. It was already about sunset as we were there, and the sun was going down, and already at that point, the police were closing up the streets. Roadblocks were being set up at all the major roadways, and so we had some, you know, some contacts, friends of a friend who was able to direct us. We went to across from the police station there in Ferguson. There was kind of a 24-hour vigil that had been set up with people kind of standing around with signs and a tent. And then across the street, there was a big, you know, SWAT team. And it was there that the movement was kind of giving people instructions about how to get in, how you could take back roads and get around the police barricades and get in to the neighborhood and get into the site, West Florissant and Ferguson Avenue, where the fighting and the protests had gone on. And so as we were going out through the back roads, we passed, you know, every day we seemed to pass this one parking lot, this particular parking lot where the National Guard had set up. And we looked out there, and it was just hundreds and hundreds of these armored vehicles and tents. And it was like an army base had been set up in this parking lot. And I was actually forced to think of, there was a union activist and a folk singer, Joe Hill. And in one of his songs, he said, and at the time, one of the big, the big weapons was the Gatling gun, which was an early machine gun. And he said, "Why do they mount up Gatling guns 1,000 miles from oceans where foreign fleets could never land? Ain't that a funny notion? If you must know the reason why, just strike for better wages. And then, my son, if you don't die, you'll sing this song for ages." You know, and it's interesting to think about, because they're always promoting military spending and building up the military budget, saying, "We're doing this to protect you from those people over there." Well, we know what that military budget's really about. It's about fighting people who stand up to Wall Street. And when we stand up to Wall Street and we fight back here in the United States, they're going to use it against us. And that's the reality. That's the reality of the military budget and the military. When we got through the roadblocks, managed to maneuver our way, and we got to the crowd, we saw a crowd of about 2,000 young people in the streets. And, you know, the media was full of these reports about outside agitators. I didn't see any outside agitators. I saw a crowd of young people between about the age of 18 and 30, from Ferguson, from St. Louis, marching. You know, that chant, "We're young, we're strong, we're marching all night long." It was a huge crowd. And I would say the crowd was majority women. Young black women were the majority in the crowd. It was women. And it was amazing, and it was very, very militant. I mean, the spirit was very, very militant. And I would, you know, about 3 hours, this crowd was circling the block, and every so often, the police would kind of move in. And you got this feeling that the attitude of the police there was like, it was just this hateful attitude. It was like they saw the people in the neighborhood as worthless, and it was like, how dare they come out and protest? It was just this vicious attitude. And, you know, every so often, you know, the crowd would keep marching around for about 3 hours, and then, you know, the police would come in with their riot gear and push them a little bit. And one particular incident stands out in my mind. There was a young man who had a sign that he had written on a piece of cardboard, and he was standing there kind of taunting the cops. And he shouted, "You all are cowards. You think you're tough, and you come out here when you got huge guns. We've got nothing, and you think you're heroes." And he shouted this at the cops, and he was taunting them. And then the police charged out into the crowd to go after him. So I was there in the capacity as the press, and as the police were charging out of the crowd, I said to the officer who was charging, I said, "So are you going out to arrest him because he called you a coward? Can I get an answer about that?" He didn't answer my question. You know, and that night things escalated, and it was kind of unclear what was going on. It was this crowd of about 2,000 people circling up, and it's a long block. It's not a small area. You know, it's a long block circling around and coming back, and so, you know, we're all circling, we're kind of following the crowd. Like I said, every 15 minutes or so, the police come in and try to push people out of the area. And then all of a sudden, everyone in the crowd is running that way. And we're all running that way. We don't know what's happening. We're running that way. And we're running that way, and all of a sudden we hear boom, boom, boom. And then we're all running the other way. What had happened? And what had happened? I guess one bottle had been thrown when we were all running that way. One single bottle had been thrown. And the response of the police was to pull out their shotguns and go into the crowd and start firing rubber bullets. And you know, that night in that press conference that Imani referenced, they denied having shot rubber bullets. But the next day at the demonstration, people brought the casings that proved that they shot rubber bullets. They shot rubber bullets. And the next night, I actually spoke to a young man who was struck in the face with a rubber bullet, had a huge gash on the side of his face. It was unbelievable. And, you know, when I was talking to people in the neighborhood, you know, people talked about, you know, some of the people in the neighborhood had done the calculations. They thought maybe it would cost about $6 million, but I've heard even bigger numbers. But they said, you know, all this money has been spent on bringing the armies and the police and the National Guard into this neighborhood. And they said, you know, if they wanted to make things better in Ferguson, why couldn't they provide one single job? Why couldn't they provide one single job? You know, and in the conversations I had with people, one point, you know, that was made, and one thing I just remember the most is that millions of dollars was spent to send all kinds of clergy and folks into the neighborhood to urge people to stop protesting. People from all over the country, people from the Oprah Network, people from religious organizations were all coming in, you know, to counsel people and urge them to stop protesting. But yet I interviewed people who kept saying, we had to do this. And the looting was a big issue. That was what everyone always brought up. They made it sound like all the protesting was this looting. But there was a young woman that I interviewed that I spoke to, and she said the looting was necessary. She said, because if we hadn't gone out there and looted, no one would know who Mike Brown was. She said, stuff like this happens all the time. All the time the police are beating people up, they're doing people, and it's happening. All the time they're doing this. And it's about time somebody did something. And if we hadn't gone out and wrecked some stores, no one would have cared, and they would have gotten away with this. That's a fair point to make. If I learned anything from being in Ferguson, what I learned was to never underestimate the masses. You know, you tell people that you're a communist or a socialist and you want a revolution, and they laugh, oh, that'll never happen. Socialist revolution in the United States. Never underestimate the masses. You know, people fight back against oppression. And, you know, one of the things that struck me about it is that, you know, this was such a serious situation with people being killed and with people being injured every night. But the atmosphere of the people that were protesting was celebratory. It was like they were celebrating. Like this was their chance to finally fight back. And they were happy, and they were elated as they were going out and protesting. And, you know, there was a T-shirt. I know one guy from the community, there's this picture that kind of went around the media of a young man throwing a tear gas canister back at the police. So there was a couple of people one night who had a T-shirt, and it had that picture on it, and below it said, "Ferguson fucks with the curfew." And it was like a pride, you know, like we went out and we fought. You know, it's a serious situation. Someone's dead, but it's like people are holding their heads up. And I was forced, you know, to think of, you know, this is a book by Lenin. And in here, Lenin talks about a similar situation about 100 years ago. And he talks about how, you know, in Russia, the peasants and the workers were fighting back. And he says, this is the time for revolutionary parties to make their aims more comprehensive and more bold. And he's talking about, because some of the social democratic forces are saying, the masses are finally in motion. We can't bring revolutionary politics. Let's not ruin it now. And he's saying, no, this is the time to bring the revolutionary message. And this is what he said, and I'm going to end with this. He said, revolutions are locomotives of history. Revolutions are festivals of the oppressed and exploited. At no other time are the masses of people in a position to come forward so actively as creators of a new social order as at the time of revolution. At such times, the people are capable of performing miracles.
We'll be right back. call police to escort them. You don't ride out them lies, you just quote them. Get offline, plug into this modem. No, you can't outvote them, the rules are still golden. Only jewels we holdin's if we guarding our scrotum. If you press the ear to the turf that is stolen, you can hear the sound of limitations exploding. Please, sir, may we have another portion with children of the beast that dodge the abortion. Neck plate firm between the floor and the portion. When shut your shit down, don't call it extortion. Caution, we're coming for your head. So call the feds and get files to shred. Every textbook read said bring you the bread. But guess what, we got you instead.
We got the guillotine.
Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU. And of course, that was The Coup with The Guillotine, you know. And of course, we heard from Caleb Maupin when he was talking about, you know, Workers' World Party in the United States, talking about his experience in Ferguson. And of course, one of the important things he learned during his time there, of course, was never underestimate the masses, never underestimate the power of working people. And the radicalization of working people and the effect that that can have and the game-changing effect that that can have on society. You know, and of course, he brought up that quote from Lenin. I can't remember what book that was from, whether it was The State and Revolution one of Lenin's many, many writings that was actually from. But, you know, the whole idea that, you know, during these times, you know, when there's actually upheaval and people are in the streets, they're demonstrating. And the masses are waking up, and they're learning how to fight back against exploitation and abuse, and all the systemic abuse and exploitation that is inherent in the capitalist system, which of course is based on the exploitation of working people, and the exploitation of labor. You know, all of these things. People are learning to fight back. They're standing up. This is not a time to like step back and not engage in radical discourse and not actually go out there and organize people and not, you know, take a step forward and talk to people about communism and socialism and like all the principles of working class power and building revolution. This is a time when you need to step up your game. And this is what Lenin was talking about. You know, so I would say now, at this particular time, in the context of the present global crisis of capitalism, this is a time when communist movements, communist parties need to act boldly. They need to step forward. Tell people what they're really about, what communism means. Challenge the lies and the falsifications and the propaganda that have been spread by reactionaries targeting communism over the years. The demonization, all the Cold War propaganda, all that stuff. Challenging those assumptions that a lot of people still have. You know, this is the time to do it. This is the time to tell people what communism really is all about. You know, and this is the time to really to get out there and organize and mobilize and like, you know, get out there and really reveal to people what communism is about. It's basically working class power, and communists are there to champion the cause of working people. That's what it's about. You know, and like I say, Workers' World Party certainly was doing that in Detroit, Michigan. you know, when they played a pretty key role in organizing people to shut down, to stop that water shut off, and water privatization was being pushed on that community. So we see this kind of stuff going on. This is what communists really need to do. They need to stand tall, need to stand proud, be proud of who they are, not try to hide who they are, you know, and tell people who we are. You know, and through our actions, through our deeds, show people what we're all about. That's what we need to do right now. You know, and I'm very encouraged by the present state of the Young Communist League. You know, in Canada, and like, you know, their level of mobilization, their level of commitment right now, I'm very inspired by that. And the fact that, you know, we've managed to get the Vancouver section of the YCL going again after like some troubles in the past years, and just we're on the move. See, communist movement and socialist movements in Canada are on the move, you know, more than they've been in a very long time. You know, not just the YCL, there's many others, but we're on the move. We're reaching out to people, we're getting noticed, and increasingly we're showing people that we matter. There are messages, there are creed, our moral message and our actions and our mobilization and what we stand for, that matters. You know, and that's what that needs to keep happening. So I'm going to take a short break now. I'm going to come back after this after these messages. So please stay tuned.
This is K-Train Fitzsimmons playing the heavily distorted chromatic harmonica. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
Attention comrades of Canadian DIY communities and underground art scenes.
This is our house, Weird Distro, the first and only not-for-profit online store for Canadian-made cassettes, LPs, CDs, and objets d'art.
One stop, one package, one massive country.
Run by Weird Canada volunteers.
For music to hold in your hands and your hearts, check out Weird Distro at distro.weirdcanada.com.
Did you know CFRU runs a program called Family Matters every Sunday morning, 11 a.m. to noon, for information, resources, support, and inspiration? Family Matters explores the joys and challenges of family life through conversations. Please listen in every Sunday morning, 11 a.m. to noon, on CFRU 93.3 FM.
The Eden Mills Writers Festival presents Taste and Transmission, an evening of music and literature at Guelph's E-Bar on Thursday, September 11th. This event features rare full band performances by local luminary Scott Merritt and Toronto's gifted Sandro Perry, plus stimulating readings and discussion by internationally renowned authors and music writers Carl Wilson and Sean Michaels. Tickets to this all-ages licensed event are available now at the Bookshelf, located beneath the E-Bar at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph, and at ticketbreak.com. Visit EdenMillsWritersFestival.ca for more information about Taste and Transmission on September 11th. Despite its best efforts, the E-Bar is not a fully accessible physical space.
Dragonfly, dragonfly.
I promised I would rap like a superstar rap. Spit like a monster, put myself on the map. First rap in English, then rap in Spanish. Que lo que tú dices, boy, I cause damage. International, worldwide resistance in my lyrics. Walking down these mean streets to the house of spirits. Yo represento lo que canto mis canciones. Amor, justicia, hip hop, revoluciones. Listen here, we done preaching to the choir. We stayed on the block, took the neighborhood higher. I guess I just listened to the little voice speaking.
one that said never deny what you seeking. It made me a believer, que todo es posible. Mi flow como la lucha, siempre sigue. They call it ADD when you wild and that don't listen. They make you think you're crazy if you question their system. Crazy, cause I look different than you. Spark fear at the corner, your peripheral. Call me crazy, like I'm the violent one. Living in the empire that was born off the gun. Now that's crazy, what I'm supposed to do when they shut the stores down and there ain't no food. Now that's crazy, like I'm the violent one. Living in the empire that was born off the gun. Call me crazy.
Crazy is as crazy does. Attack the industry with a chainsaw. A crazy buzz. What's crazy is 250 for a fare. Trying to get iced out, but it's snow everywhere. Yeah, a cold world we living in. Old girl, pimp and Kim, General Snow, minus the boneless chicken and the soulless victims. Homeless conditions. Why fight my brother when I could beat the system? I write 16s in 16 minutes.
Impossible.
That's what it is, but I know what isn't. Crazy. The words Garvey spoke. The same slang as Malcolm. Man, it's too many quotes. The wolf licking the blade, thinking it's Kool-Aid. Blood. Thirsty, turning our cells into slaves. What's crazy is you in a gang, but won't do a goddamn thing when the police bang on the corners. We learn how to hang with no more nooses, just mad trees, the same old thing. What's crazy is how they control our brain. The demonic songs that the radio play. You a revolutionary? Yeah, it's all good, but they don't know you in the hood. What's good? That's crazy. And I don't got no time to look it. Crazy, my straight jacket on crooked.
Now that's crazy, cause I look different than you. Spark fear at the corner, your peripheral. Call me crazy, like I'm the violent one. Living in the empire that was born off the gun. Now that's crazy, what I'm supposed to do when they shut the stores down and there ain't no food. Now that's crazy, like I'm the violent one. Living in the empire that was born off the gun. Call me crazy, like I lost my marbles. Like all I wanna do is criticize and argue. Like my screws loose, cause I say what I want to. Shit, say what I got to. Es por eso que canto. Queremos un cambio, en eso andamos. Yo creo caminos, no creo en obstáculos. You say I'm loco and need a doctor. I say let's be realistic and do the impossible. Check it out, I'm on a higher plane. Some say it ain't sane, I say it's okay. Let your mind sway, ride the wave. Better that than on land and stuck in one place. They want you sedated, drugged and medicated. More paper in the pockets of the drug fabricators. All indicators show our society sick. Disease by greed, that's the diagnosis. Now that's crazy, cause I look different than you. Spark fear at the corner, your peripheral. Call me crazy, like I'm the violent one. Living in the empire that was born off the gun. Now that's crazy, what I'm supposed to do when they shut the stores down and there ain't no food. Now that's crazy, like I'm the violent one. Living in the empire that was born off the gun. Call me crazy.
You people are crazy!
Hey, listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and that was Rebel Diaz with Crazy. And interestingly enough, like talk about the organizing capacity of Comrade Patrick there. You know, like Patrick, of course, has been holding down the fort on this show for the full year. Like this guy now is I visited him a few weeks ago for the People's Social Forum, and was staying with him for a while. And Patrick basically is the events coordinator at the OPERG Ottawa, at the U of Ottawa right now. And and he put together this entire show, amazing rap show, hip-hop show, which is coming up. I believe it's next week. It's going to be coming up. And, you know, he's got, like, the lineup that this guy managed to get going is just unbelievable. I mean, he had Rebel Diaz there. He has The Coup. He has a whole lineup of, like, you know, pretty damn heavy hitters. Like, from the hip-hop scene in North America, like the radical hip-hop scene in North America. He's got so many of the big names. And he brought them all out to U of Ottawa for I guess their equivalent of Diso Week, you know, at U of Ottawa. And it's going to be, like, this whole thing. It's going to be huge. You know, I'm pretty, like he was already, like, he's done so much work on that. You know, and I have every confidence it's going to pay off, like, you know, a hundredfold for him up there. I mean, like, he's just done such a good job on that and getting all that stuff. And of course, like, The Coup recently played in Toronto. And some comrades from the YCL went out to that, you know. So, I mean, they said, like, The Coup basically blew their minds. They were amazing. I'm a bit jealous. I wish I could have been there. Fortunately, I was a bit out of range. But there you have it. I did play some of their stuff tonight, though. I mean, like, that's it's kind of like, you know, give a bit of a shout out to them. But there you have it. So we haven't really got that much time left. But once again, like, it's very important to understand, like, what's been going on in Ferguson. What is part of, like, a much, much larger picture, because the mainstream media, what it tends to do, you know, frankly, what it always does, it tries to compartmentalize events like this, make them look like they're isolated incidents. They're not part of a wider pattern. They're not really all that significant. They're just kind of like this sensationalistic thing that happens and then it fades away and then it's gone. Right. And then their attention goes elsewhere. You don't hear about it ever again. You know, that's kind of what the mainstream media does with stuff like Ferguson. It's what it did with the LA riots and what, back in 1992, when Rodney King was killed in a similar manner. Actually, he didn't die. He was just beaten by police. But I mean, at the same time, like, it was a horrific beating that he sustained. And similarly, you know, once again, the officers involved did not basically got off scot-free. Just like this officer in Ferguson, like, has not been charged with anything. He's basically being protected. You know, even though he killed an unarmed man who, from all indications that I've heard, he was basically walking away with his hands in the air. In fact, that's the, in the protest, people, like, hold their hands in the air and basically say, hands up, don't shoot. Like, that's been a hallmark of these protests in Ferguson. And in solidarity demonstrations, like, including one that we had a solidarity action at the People's Social Forum in Ottawa when I was there. You know, and we did hold our hands in the air and we took a photo and we basically, this was all in solidarity with Ferguson. You know, so that's what happened. We have this guy who basically was not armed. He had his hands in the air and he still was shot dead. You know, and that's really what's happened here. And that's happened again and again. I mean, that's happened like tons of times. I mean, even while the protests in Ferguson were in full swing, I mean, there was another guy there was another black man. Apparently this guy had a knife. I mean, the details are pretty damn sketchy, but at the same time, like, yeah, he was shot multiple times, killed by the cops in St. Louis. And, you know, like, talk about excessive force. I mean, we're talking about, okay, he's got a knife in his hand. Do you have to kill him on that basis? I mean, even he has a knife in his hand. Like, you have guns, tasers, you know, you're the cops, you have access to all this hardware, and this guy has, like, a kitchen knife or something like that. And that's an excuse to, like, blow him away. Like, he's dangerous. Like, what happened, like, with, okay, using, like, non-lethal violence? Like, to, I don't know, restrain him or something like that. I mean, like, you know, what happened to that? But, of course, they're always going to say, like, oh, yeah, the officers feared for their safety and all this stuff, so it's totally justified what they did. That's pretty much what they always say. They said the same thing, like, last year when a guy who apparently had a knife was, you know, shot to death on a streetcar in Toronto. Basically gave the same explanation that time. It's like, oh, yeah, he had a knife, apparently, and, you know, so we had to kill him. We feared for our safety. That kind of thing, you know. And, of course, you know, he's got a knife. You know, we have all this, like, you know, heavy firepower. You know, and yet we felt the need to use lethal force on him. We couldn't even use a taser on him. You know, we had to shoot him dead. You know, like what does that say? I mean, like, there's no, you know, it's madness. I mean, like, it's not a justification for any of this. I mean, it's basically just, like, made up stuff. I mean, basically the cops wanted to, like, you know, really brutalize someone. They did it. They ended up killing him. And then, of course, afterwards they cover their asses. That's what happens. So yeah, what more can be said? You know, I think I've touched most of the bases. So, I mean, basically, you know, comrades, stay vigilant. And I'm going to be here next week with more Back in the USSR. So this is Siegfried Berezov. And I will see you all next week. Until then, take care. You've been listening to CFRU. Yeah, cheers, everyone.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Allow me to introduce to you a man who was outstanding in Philadelphia, was outstanding in Chicago, and 2 minutes ago he was outstanding on the street. None other. And yours truly.
Democrats.
No applause. Just throw money.
Stomping through the hood with my chucks on. I knock on every door. Who the f*** home?
I'm trying to find some trouble I can dabble in. Yeah. I've been traveling, pockets getting fat again. Apparently you took and don't really get it. No flouncing with your thinking I won't really hit it. Yeah, she on my line like fish bait. You got a problem? Wait, dog, let's get this straight. Strickling, yeah, better than these rap dummies. Watch your tune, got goons to hold a strap for me. A bunch of wild from the mid-weezy, swerving up the block, shop listening to Jeezy. And money ain't a thing on some chicken. This beat's right up my alley, it's magic. I tend to get a little gully when I spit the joint. And known to rip my legs.